start to see these ebbs and flows through history. Like, why do we come up to these incredible periods of high everything, technology, mathematics, art, and then we collapse?
Yeah.
Again and again and again. Like, what causes that drive up to the high points? Extra calories, so people have enough food in their bellies so they can take care of going on beyond the basics of just having to stay alive to have enough calories to get to the next day to grow more food or just stay alive for more calories. Once you have extra calories, you can begin to solve a lot of problems. If you have the food thing sussed out, you can solve an enormous amount of problems. And then we start to get into this problem solving, and it increases as temperatures increase, as fertile lands produce more food, and then something changes at that apex. And we've seen it again and again and again through history. What is it? It's the change of the jet streams and the ability for us to grow food in the same exact areas in these northern latitudes. So I'll give you this time around, it's very similar. So you're looking at 45 degrees north latitude and above. Anything at that latitude and above is going to produce less and less and less. And eventually some places in, say, northern Canada where they're growing barley and some kind of wheat is going to go to zero. Right around the United States and on the border with Canada is going to be greatly reduced. You start to see the same thing in northern China and Heilongjiang area. And then we look at Russia and the northern areas of Europe going down in production. And now we got Ukraine completely almost offline, maybe 5% they'll produce this year. Kazakhstan, another hotspot, another breadbasket, having problems producing because of the political unrest. So everywhere you look, there's less and less food being produced across the planet. But would you know it? Would that be the excuse that they would tell you? Or are they just going to say it's inflation?
If you've been following recent developments, you're likely aware of the ongoing transformation in the global economy. The BRICS nations are actively advocating for the replacement of the dollar as the world's reserve currency. And an increasing number of countries are aligning with their efforts. Concurrently, the stability of the Western banking system is facing unprecedented challenges, reaching a level of fragility not seen since the 2008 financial crisis. The reputable Weiss Research Group, known for accurately forecasting bank failures with 99.3% accuracy since 2008, now anticipates a substantial risk of over 4,000 banks facing vulnerabilities, with a fourth of them on the brink of imminent failure. According to their data, all the experts are predicting a major economic collapse more impactful than the crash of 1929. Historically, precious metals have proven to be resilient assets during such economic uncertainties. Now is an opportune moment to consider acquiring gold and silver to safeguard your family's financial well-being. For the most reliable service and the best prices on gold and silver, I recommend Miles Franklin at info@milesfranklin.com. When you contact them, mention Sarah sent me. It ensures you receive the best service and pricing available in the country. That's a guarantee from them to me. Take proactive steps now to secure your assets and protect your loved ones. Contact info@milesfranklin.com and let them know Sarah sent you. Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have David Dubine coming to the program. He's going to give you a different take on what's going on. And I think this is the kind of conversations we need, is to look at things from different perspectives. He says that the entire Earth is in a cycle and that it helps explain some of the behaviors of our government. Obviously, we have a fiat currency cycle going on in the background too, or the foreground, and it's not really background, and how all these things play together and some of the behaviors, even how it ties in with geoengineering and what they're doing, what these other countries are doing. And then he describes the globalist plan to centralize all food production in Africa and move us all into cities and then create pasture, you know, back to nature everywhere else. I mean, these guys are pagans, so that's what they want to do. And then corral us into small cities. And the dumbest thing you could ever do is centralized food production. That is terrible. It puts us at great risk, the humanity at great risk, to do anything that stupid. You need to have food production as distributed as possible. And that's why growing your own food, having, you know, watching Marjorie's seminars, which you can go to sarahsbackyardfarm.com and you can watch all these seminars for free. She's going to have a war preparation one as well. You can sign up for that starting next week. So I think this is going to be aired the week before. And you can do that. Otherwise, you go to Sarah's back. It's all going to be on sarahsbackyardfarm.com. You can sign up for her learning how to grow food. And then also it's going to be, depending on what time you watch this, she's going to have the war preparation guide, different skills to deal with war and famine and things that can come to our backyard. And so it's good to have these skills regardless. I know it's kind of scary, but the more prepared you are, the less scary it is. And I just think, you know, being prepared, and plus this will save you money. I mean, the MIT index just came that living in a big city it increased by 40% from 2023 to 2024 on what it takes for a single person. It went from about 68,000 to 98,000, about 40% to live comfortably in a large city. These kind of inflation rates we can't handle. And so learning how to grow your own food and learning how to be self-sufficient is really important right now. So again, Sarah's backyardfarm.com. Okay, let's get into this really interesting, to say the least, conversation with David Dubine. Hi, David. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I mean, the realm of people you talk to and some of the information I have, I really believe it could, dovetail into a good conversation of A, explaining why a lot of these things in the world are happening right now, but B, also giving some solutions for what seems like such a dark era. It's just a cycle. We've been through it before. We wouldn't have the conversation if our ancestors didn't survive it. So what do we do in the interim? And, you know, the world's going to change around us, but how do we also prepare for this?
Well, yeah. Okay. Before we get into this, because people are going to find this conversation really interesting. How did you started off back in the day believing in global warming? You were trading coffee, buying coffee. Why did you believe that, and why did you change?
Well, I believed it like everybody else. We saw the Al Gore movies. We were all brought up in the same school system, at least in the Western nations. It's about CO2. The ice caps are melting. All these things. The best scientists said it. We got to believe the experts. IPCC said it, and then, you know, you just believe it because it's everywhere and all the academics are regurgitating it. So why would you not believe anything else? Because all the experts told you and all the news is saying it, and the movies are saying it, and all these people around, the news feeds are saying it. So what's not to believe?
Yeah.
Until you start buying coffee in Myanmar, a place called Burma, down near the equator, and they're talking about freeze damage on the tops of the coffee trees there. I'm like, that doesn't make sense to me. And then I started to do a little more research, and they were telling me back their great grandfather's era, late 1800s into the early 1900s, which we know now is a centennial minimum, which is a very low era of solar activity or sunspot activity, which cooled. And then that made sense to me. And then I started to look for different answers and reaching out to a bunch of people. And I started to realize this thing's a cycle and it's back again. And this is why we're getting some of the upsets and extremes here and there. And that's really what changed it for me, was doing my own research and then finding the cyclicity or the cycles of it. And once I understood it was a cycle and it ebbs and flows and it returns, then I was thinking, well, how are governments going to handle this thing that was last in the 1640s? It's back again. So how would you handle this as a system of governance? And that really sent me on this whole breadcrumb trail to look for the answers.
So you believe it's a cycle, or the evidence is showing that it's a cycle and that we're back in it. What does it mean to be back in it? And what is the length of these cycles?
Approximately two solar cycles. So if we're in solar cycle 25 now, as we come off of this, now anybody can do their own research. I highly encourage you to do the research. Don't even believe a thing I say. I'm here to just present some information, and I wish you would double check it, triple check it, and try to disprove me, because after you try to do that, the own litmus test, you'll be like, whoa, how did this escape everybody? Is more. So when you start to look for these cycles, you know, you come up with some of the space agencies and it's all about sunspot count. So if you look out at the forecast for solar cycle 26 and 27, and this comes from officials at NASA and European Space Agency. They're talking about low solar activity that would be something equal to the 1640s, called the Maunder Minimum Era. And once you start to look out at this and say, wait a minute, what happened during that time? And you realize fingerprints of it are population migration, the complete destruction of the economy and reemergence, and then the way the governments oversee the citizens needed to change also, because there was so much famine, incredible hyperinflation in the food price rises, People moved. Some places emptied out 90% People had to leave to go to better areas to find food so they wouldn't starve. And then a lot of people died during this time too. Now, some estimates are between 10 and 25% of the global population perished. So I'm thinking, if this is coming right now, we should start to see massive movements of government, massive shifts in the economy, and a huge movement of supply chains to try to get ready for all these things inbound. Now, the excuses you're seeing out in the news right now of why these events are happening, the same exact ideas are happening, but they're giving you a different excuse, because if you knew it was natural, you knew it was coming back, you do things differently in your life right now. And I really believe that. Are they trying to protect you, or are they just trying to prevent panic? I don't know. So that's why we're here having the conversation. And I don't know if they protect us, really. I think it's more of a, you know, save themselves and let us fend for the scraps up here on the surface, on the windshield, if for a better term.
That's right. They don't, doesn't seem like they care too much about us, but you have a show called Adapt 2030. And then you also talk about the mini ice age. Now, are the Adapt 2030, do you believe that's the time frame? Because they talk about Agenda 2030 and their new things. Do you think it's tied? Is that what that is a playoff of being tied to their, or is that a completely different thing? Their Agenda 2030 is just some dominant thing, control structure, versus them knowing about this cycle?
Originally, when I started the channel, there was no anything Agenda 2030. It was all back in like Agenda 21 and that sort of thing further back in the day. My whole premise was we have to adjust the food growing strategies on the planet by 2030 for most people to move through this, because some of the top minds that were studying different polarities of the sun and magnetic fields on the sun were saying 2028 will be our low period of this point. Now, our government, this is back in 2018, mind you, they were saying, you know, we need to start preparing food, stockpiling food, getting ready for the famines that are going to arrive in 2028, or maybe not famine everywhere, but food insecurity to the point that it will absolutely rock the core of the society and civilization on the planet when your food costs 3, 5, 10 times more. And we're starting to see a lot of, you know, doubling and tripling of food prices, and we're already seeing the problems that it's creating. So can you imagine if it doubles or triples again? I think that's kind of the breaking point. And we're starting to get really close to what those forecasts were for 2028 and the food insecurity enough to actually topple governments across the planet.
Well, the MIT index just showed that from 2023 to 2024, there was a 40% increase in, if you're living in a major city, to be able to live from like 68,000 or 67,000 to 98,000. I can't remember off the top of my head, but 68 to about 98. And from 2023 to 2024, to live comfortably in a major city for one person, that's a massive increase. That's about a 40% increase in 1 year.
Is it really an increase? Okay, please. Sorry, I didn't. Go ahead.
Well, I'm saying it's an increase in inflation. I mean, just to live like that, and most of it is food.
Right. Is it really the inflation, or is it the dollars being devalued and they're just pumping it out so they can continue to buy? And I'm talking about governments on the side of preparation, because during the COVID time, were the shortages really shortages as we understand them, or was that just a rediversion of what was being produced into continuity of government, into their warehouses, stockpiles, and wherever that they, you know, assemble these goods to try to continue our system of governance forward? But everything that you see right now, our money is completely, you know, being here in Asia, they're encouraging people to buy gold out here. This is like a number one thing. Get a gram of gold, get a half ounce of gold, get a quarter ounce of gold, but whatever you do, take your money, buy gold. That's not the messaging we're getting in the West. The message is it's a barbaric relic, and, you know, keep holding those dollars. And there's a firewall. There is a huge King Kong-sized firewall going up amongst the nations out here that I'm away from the whole churning propaganda machine back in the West here. But when you see it out here, they're definitely planning for firewalling off the West. And we're going to be over here by ourselves with our seven nations trading amongst ourselves, and the rest of the planet is going to run away from us. And when you see it, they're moving to gold. They know that this fiat that we're issuing is not going to be sustainable. And I think we have to issue in the United States now at $8.9 trillion over the next year to keep everything flowing. We got these interest payments hit $1 trillion a year. Everybody out here understands it's unsustainable even for another year to two maximum. So they're trying to, you know, cut their losses. Japan tried it first, and I was just up in Japan. The exchange rate is 152 yen to a dollar. And when I first went there several years ago, it was 80 to 1.
Wow.
Went there a couple of years ago before pre-COVID, and it was 100 to 1. Now it's 152 to 1. So can you imagine people living there? They were griping, complaining about the prices increasing all over the place.
Wow. Well, yeah, I just see it as the inflation of the currency because, you know, the beginning of hyperinflation because the currency is failing. But that's how I always
saw it. That's true. Now bring you to cocoa.
Yeah.
You know, has anybody been following the cocoa prices here? It went from $650 a ton to $10,000 a ton in about a year.
Oh, my God.
So even in the last, say, 4 months, it went from around. So you look at that in the hyperinflation on the cocoa prices.
So what does that translate into just the cost of chocolate?
I mean, you're talking about people starving, literally, that couldn't afford the food. And what do you get? You know, you look back in some of these chapters of history whenever things have hyperinflated. What keeps that value? And why is our government not encouraging us to buy gold? Why are they trying to get us to go into the and hold these assets that are not going to be worth anything, where they're worth less and less every day, when the opposite is occurring out here, where they're encouraging people to buy metals and get prepared for this change, because everything's in Shanghai now. The world gold price is being driven by Shanghai, and everything is metals has moved out to Asia. They are so on it onto, they are getting ready for the shift. I assure you they are. It's going to be shocking when it happens. I think it's going to be lightning fast. And you probably attest to that. You talk to many others that are into the financial space. I'm just seeing what I see out here on the ground of the encouragement of citizens, the kids, you know, put your money in gold. Don't put it in the fiat. They know something's about to shift. But then at the same time, if you know this grand solar minimum cycle's here and it's on the same exact timeline of collapse of fiat, look at the population migration across the planet. Again, the same thing is happening. And then the governments are restructuring themselves to absolutely suppress your speech. The way they're operating is something that we don't even recognize our governments anymore. That's how much it's changed.
That's very
true. Same thing happened in the 1640s. Same thing happened in the 1200s. And you go back at the beginning, say the birth of Christ era, right around that time and into 400 AD, that giant shift where, you know, Christianity solidified itself. And then we start looking at these chapters of history again and again and again with these massive changes that occur in government, finance or economy, and then population itself. And we're just repeating, what has happened the last six times of this grand solar minimum to say 400 BC. Nothing new really under the sun, except the way it's being handled and the lies we're being fed. Instead of us being told it's a natural cycle so we could prepare for it, we're given all these excuses of why these things are happening. Oh, point fingers to the bad guy over there, point fingers to the bad economic banks over there. These people are hoarding this. All those people there, they're doing bad things to the supply chain. The blame is everywhere else except where it should be, at that big yellow thing in the sky that's shifting our jet streams, and governments know what's happening. And I don't think they're going to come clean with the citizens because it might create too much panic. But that's the reason for everything you're seeing truly across the planet, as our lives are just ripped apart at the shreds here. And you can feel it. You can see it. Everybody can. It's different now.
Well, what does it mean what does it practically mean? I mean, April is a weird month. We have all these cosmic things going on, but what does it mean practically? Because if you look back at history, there is a shift at where you could grow food well and where the deserts were, where the water was and where the land was. You know, continents, not whole continents, but islands are underwater and then they're not underwater. What does it mean? Like, is that what you're talking about when things shift?
It is, exactly. And I sent you a couple of PDFs. One of them was some research I'd done for some persons who were going to set up farms in Arizona and New Mexico. And I started to take a look at the North American monsoon, which shifts on a 4,500-year cycle. And the shift that would be the mark is what we've seen, all these massive floods up in across California and up in Nevada. That's that push. It comes off the Baja Peninsula and starts driving much more moisture up into what right now is considered the driest areas of America. But you go back a few, 600, 800 years, and we start to see, you know, full cities there that had dried out, that they no longer could stay there because there wasn't enough water, and no water, no crops. And you start to see the hydrological cycle get changed as the jet streams start to move in different flows as the magnetic field on our planet shifts. That's all related to the sun.
Our world is changing rapidly. Many crucial systems we depend upon are collapsing. And the most important system that is failing is the food supply. But amidst the chaos, there is a path to resilience.
I have the great Marjorie Wildcraft coming to the program. People who do not know her, she is kind of like the mother of ultimate preppers. And she's really good.
I've spent decades finding the fastest, easiest, and funnest ways for the average person to be able to grow a lot of food.
I used to be a hopeless gardener, but thanks to Marjorie, I'm growing food, and I'm really happy my family has more food security.
Marjorie's webinar gave me the confidence to raise and process my own meat.
Food production, and Marjorie, I want to thank you for the free webinar that you put out there at that website. I've already had massive response from people that love your information and how you express the joy of learning how to grow food also, and in a small amount of space when it really counts. So thank you for all that you do, Marjorie.
If you go to sarahsbackyardfarm.com, you can sign up for that seminar, that free seminar. I'll have the link below. And so if you have the opportunity, check it out, sarahsbackyardfarm.com, and you will get a ton of free, great information.
And then you start to see these ebbs and flows through history. Like, why do we come up to these incredible periods of high everything, technology, mathematics, art, and then we collapse?
Yeah.
Again and again and again. Like, what causes that drive up to the high points? Extra calories. So people have enough food in their bellies so they can take care of going on beyond the basics of just having to stay alive to have enough calories to get to the next day to grow more food or just stay alive for more calories. Once you have extra calories, you can begin to solve a lot of problems. If you have the food thing sussed out, you can solve an enormous amount of problems. And then we start to get into this problem solving, and it increases as temperatures increase, as fertile lands produce more food. And then something changes at that apex. And we've seen it again and again and again through history. What is it? It's the change of the jet streams and the ability for us to grow food in the same exact areas in these northern latitudes. So I'll give you this time around, it's very similar. So you're looking at 45 degrees north latitude and above. Anything at that latitude and above is going to produce less and less and less. And eventually some places in, say, northern Canada where they're growing barley and some kind of wheat is going to go to zero. Right around the United States and on the border with Canada is going to be greatly reduced. You start to see the same thing in northern China in Heilongjiang area. And then we look at Russia and the northern areas of Europe going down in production. And now we got Ukraine completely almost offline, maybe 5% they'll produce this year. Kazakhstan, another hotspot, another breadbasket, having problems producing because of the political unrest. So everywhere you look, there's less and less food being produced across the planet. But would you know it? Would that be the excuse that they would tell you? Or are they just going to say it's inflation?
Well, I think that there's both going on, maybe, right? Because we do have a fiat currency that's dying. And then we have the food supply that's in jeopardy. So are you saying, too, that the food supply, we just have to shift where we're growing food and shift what we're doing? Or will there be a period where there'll be few places that productively grow food?
The shift has already been planned to occur into North Africa and the Middle East. Now, if you start to take a look over there, now this is counterintuitive. They put the largest hydroelectric dam in Ethiopia. In Africa, it's the largest hydroelectric dam. But then again, you look at Ethiopia and Sudan, those are the driest places in Africa. So why would you put a dam there? And the Chinese did the same thing in the Tarim Basin out there, if you're in Xinjiang. And that's some of the driest areas of China. But why would they suddenly start to put the largest hydroelectric, one of the largest hydroelectric dams in Western China in the driest place in China? Well, they know the hydrological cycle's shifting and moving. And the crazy thing was with the new Renaissance Dam, which I'm referencing over in Eritrea and Ethiopia area, they were predicting it would take about 7 years for it to fill up. And it only took two because the cyclone cycle's a little bit different. The above ground moisture patterns are changing over Western Africa, and they call it the West African monsoon. And then Gaddafi proved the point of drilling down and getting the water from the Nubian sandstone aquifer, different aquifers across Northern Africa, the Sousse aquifer that's over below Mauritania, and also all the way up into Morocco. And if you look, there's, I don't know, thousands, tens of thousands of cubic kilometers of water beneath the surface there of the sand. So if you can combine that, where we have to start the new debt cycle over, like the one we've run, it's run to its course. And this is the collapse. The hyperinflation's coming. The fiat money system, as you know, it is being revamped. The 80-year cycle and the fourth turning, we're at it. Where are you going to restart the debt system at? Well, if you start in Africa and North Africa and the Sahel, and we have to build out an entire new grow zone. And by the way, it's larger than the combined growing area of the United States and Canada combined. If you do the North African Sahel and you swing that over into parts of the Middle East there, there is more growing space and you could double rotate the crop. The thing is, you need to put all the infrastructure in there. The water pumps.
Yeah, the rain needs to come, but you think the natural change in the weather patterns is the rain is going to hit that area. It's going to be more fertile ground, and the ground like the Midwest. Do you think that, because that's a breadbasket of the Midwest or of the United States, is that going to lose its fertility?
Maybe not the fertility, but the crop yields based on the rainfall patterns or the droughts that come in. Now it's going to shift over. Now, places like Arizona, New Mexico, et cetera, with that North American monsoon shifting up there are going to become wetter. Like you saw a few stories this year, like record floods in Southern California and that whole Burning Man thing, it got really wet up in there. That's what I'm talking about. That moisture is being pushed up in that corridor now from down in Baja. So that's going to be a continuous wetting pattern. Now, will it be that wet every single year? Probably not. It's going to, you know, like weather does or climate does, it's up and down and it's variable naturally. But the drought cycle also, we've seen some amazing droughts in these last couple of years across the Midwest grow belt. Sorghum was really hit terribly last year. They were at 100-year lows in production in the panhandle of Texas and up into Oklahoma there where they do a lot of sorghum. But you take a look across the planet, where are things being disrupted? China had a terrible crop season because of floods. And then we see a huge amount of extra moisture coming down across the Sahel. And the Chinese are over there farming that. That's why they're building the ports on the East Coast across from Tanzania. They need to export that extra food out to get it back to China. So when you see who's there first, farming hundreds of square miles already, you get the point. Yeah, the proof of concept was there. Gaddafi proved it by drilling underground into the aquifers that you can grow food using that source of water, primary. And also it's always replenished because if you pull it out of there, the sea around there is going to continue to refill that, although not at like millions of or hundreds of millions of gallons per second. But as you pull it out, there's going to be so much. It's really an untapped area of the planet. And we're talking tens of thousands of cubic kilometers of water under the ground there to be utilized. So when you start to say that they've already chosen the place, they're going to abandon other places. So if you abandon food production in other places, again, the viability of the economy in those areas have already been written off. You know, you're better at me than I am doing spreadsheets because you own businesses and that sort of thing, and you don't P&L on that. So I need to write off this area here in mid-Canada or northern, you know, going up into the grow belts in Canada. But I need to now, you know, shift that asset over into, and we need to allocate some funds and get this thing built out. That's the restarting of the debt again after this collapse comes. You need money's just going to move. It's never going to disappear. They've already chosen the spots that this new grow zone area will be set up in.
Wow, this is really fascinating. So now, you talk in your other shows, and we talked a little bit beforehand, that there's an event. Do you foresee this all just kind of shifting in a very short period of time, or is it something that shifts over many years?
Well, in terms of us having a shift, I would ask everybody out there, in the blink of an eye, what you consider from the beginning of COVID until now, how much has your life shifted? If you say zero, you're very lucky, because I really don't know very many people that had zero shift. Now, in those last 5 years, was that an enormous amount of shift? Because in the next five is when the geophysical changes are really going to start. And you start to look at this and say, all right, well, I wanted to add one thing that I forgot about. Some reports are coming out, and I can't say, is it truly, you know, etched in stone? But the idea is to consolidate all that growing area in North Africa, in the Sahel, Middle East, all into one area for the planet. They want to take the rest of the planet offline and have all these like nature zones set up and these different no-go zones and put people in these city areas, take everything else off and do nature restoration for what we consider now, you know, Midwest grow belts. And they want to bring it back to grassland prairies, and they want to do the same in Europe, and they want to rewild it with Pleistocene animals as they're doing, and they want to rewild the place. But so whether they're met, if they can take it to the Uber and the pendulum swings as far as they want to go with this project or their ideas, is grow food in one consolidated place on the planet and then send it out to the rest of the planet. And whoever controls that grow zone, and if it truly goes there and they can control the world's food supply, grown in one area, originated in one area, shipped from one area under consolidation of who knows who or what corporations, that's where they want to take it. Now, how quickly could that shift occur? Well, we're about to see a couple things here, in my opinion. There's a, should be a tidal event coming up here in October of this year in 2024. Now, we're not talking about massive earthquakes. We're not talking about mountains falling over. We're just talking about higher tides, 2 to 3 times higher, preceding coming in the month of September up to October. And once we get around October 23rd or 24th, it's an unknown. Will it go exponentially higher? Will it stay the same or not? But you got to think about 2 to 3 times higher tides for weeks or a month coming in and going out of the event. Like, how devastating would that be for our coastlines and our, you know, logistics, you know, routes that we have right now? It's the velocity of water that would be coming in. The speed and the density of it would overwhelm anything that we currently have. And then pulling out that direction too, going out on low tides, again, a lot of channels would just go dry, or the draft wouldn't be there for a lot of ships, because you're talking about, say, some of these areas ship 3 feet on a tidal flow. You're talking, instead of 3 feet, you're talking 9 feet. So then some ships won't have enough, you know, clearance on that. But then if you go further north, or some places that are like 20-foot tides, you're talking like 40, 60-foot lower tides, and then coming in also on the much higher range. Now, this is all based on 4 gas giants in the outer solar system in the one quadrant. And I would encourage everybody to look at the solar geometry out there, the solar diagrams, and take a look at planetary geometry, where the planets actually sit in their orbits. Jupiter, Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune, and they make a square. Now, the last time this square formation was 79 AD. So we start to look and go, 79 AD, okay, Vesuvius is kind of the famous thing there. There was that, you know, shift of age as well. The Roman Empire had its first cataclysmic setback. Now, they try to blame it on bringing a bunch of, you know, foreign, say, soldiers in there. But, you know, what's happening? Why are they going out for so many more resources around 100 AD? Unless they lost their traditional growing zones. And that's why they're running around looking at all these other places and the invasions. And then people started to lose faith in that at the time. You know, once you, your leaders can't even guarantee you food, you kind of run to the end. Like in China, when they say the emperor loses the mandate from heaven, it means when the emperor can no longer provide like food for the populace, that they lost the divine right to rule the people. You know, they say they're from the gods and from the dragons, but if they can't feed the people, then they lost their right to rule.
That's right.
So you start to see this. Yeah, excuse me, I just rambled on that. So go ahead.
No, that's right. When you can't feed the people, people stop. That's what happened with the French Revolution. They couldn't feed their children. And the women actually were the ones that rose up, because they were working and their husband was working and their children were still dying. And they said, hell with this. And that's why the revolution happened. The women actually, when your babies are dying and you can't feed them, they have no fear.
And that's what's happened again and again. So if that's just the standard for what happens in the society when the food reduces to where it gets so expensive that you're literally fighting, working for a day's wage for a loaf of bread, at what point do you give up hope? And at what enough people do that, that then they know the government will absolutely be overthrown or changed? You know, the United States is such a large place, would be more regional in states and that sort of thing. But take it out over across the entire planet. I mean, how much civil unrest and strife and people so angry with the governments right now do you see across the planet? It's literally everywhere because of food costs. Now, luckily in America, we have some of the lowest food costs on the planet. You know, some places in Pakistan, 45% of everything they make goes to food. We're down somewhere around 15, won 5%.
Oh, that's changing.
It's changing. It is. Yeah. You know, we're starting to see it here also. People are getting angry at home because the food prices are rising so fast that it's really, they don't have time for entertainment, or they don't have money for entertainment. They don't have time because they're working two jobs to pay for the food and the rent and the insurance. And although you just talked about living in the cities, I mean, how many extra hours do you need to work to provide 40% increase in your cost of living?
Well, you got to get the heck out of big cities. You got to start living in a smaller town, places where the cost of living isn't so bad. You're closer to the food. But let me ask you, okay, so they're planning on changing where the world supply is and centralizing it, which I think is a complete mistake. I think food supply should be decentralized as much as possible and grown everywhere, but they want to centralize it. Where did you find this? Is this part of the World Economic Forum? You know how they had the COVID, everything's going to be reset on COVID, and they had the big target back in 2020 or 2019 when they did that? Or is it something, other documents that you found?
Yeah, there's a tremendous amount of Middle East, North Africa, MENA documents that intertwine with like the World Bank, the Bank for International Settlements, the investment plans moving forward with central bank digital currencies. The only reason I really stumbled across this was several years ago, they were talking about using a stable coin to be able to pay all the workers that were going to come into this area. And the stable coin that had been chosen was Circle, USDC at that time. Now I'm sure it could have changed, but then they were trying to use Algorand and a couple others out there to be able to get the investment in to pay. So 1 = 1, it doesn't matter if you're from Ghana, it doesn't matter if you're from Togo, it doesn't matter if you're from Sudan, you go work and you get paid 1 = 1, and you take it across the planet. And this is the whole thing where they were trying to use yellow with the cards to bring out payment systems across Africa, because they needed that stability of knowing you're going to get paid and you're not going to get raked over the coals with your exchange rates. Because if you're going to try to change, something from Nigeria up into Eritrea, the exchange rate is going to be horrendous, like a 25%, 30% just to exchange it, because nobody wants to touch that. So this is all the things that were being discussed in the documents. And the Bank for International Settlements is very forthcoming with all of the plans that they want to put together with future finance. They just figure nobody's going to read the stuff. And if you go in with the IPCC also, with the rewilding projects and the dam removal projects up in Europe, and there's a whole bevy in there. If you get into the dam removal projects, then it dovetails straight into the rewilding projects. And then you start to find this, that they want to take people off the land. They want to rewild the farms. But where are all these people going to go? Well, they're going to get forced into the cities. Okay, well, if all the farms close down and are rewilded, then where are they going to grow the food? Yeah, down there in Africa. And there's a huge amount of documents that overlay on top of each other, but I would encourage everybody out there, start with the MENA documents, M-E-N-A, that's Middle East North African Association. And from there, then you get into the finance doc, and then you can start to get into the planned. There's in the area of Chad, in southern Chad, there's already a couple test zones going on that the Chinese are controlling. They're growing a couple hundred square miles of crops down there. And once you start to see how they were laying out the grids with their irrigation systems, putting up the new roads, they were trying to build rail lines. And then they put a blueprint on what they were going to do with development in there. So it just all leads back to one global governance system. And at this time, it's really, I mean, I agree with you totally that you can't grow food in one place and try to distribute it to the rest of the planet. But then you look at it and they're trying to remove all of our cattle production, any kind of meat production. You look up in Oregon with the contained feedlot laws that have just come in. So somebody's got 3 cows, 5 sheep, and they have like a concrete pad, or they have a gravel, pad or a gravel area out on their farm. They're now considered a contained feedlot, and they need to put $100,000 of, infrastructure in there to try to prevent some sorts of runoff. And you start to see that they're really going after our food supply now. So once the food supply is taken away, then where does it come from is the question. But they already have the answer. That's the thing. They plan to centralize it. That's the scariest thing. They already have a plan to try to centralize global food control under one roof of control of one governmental body over one global governance system.
That's about the worst plan I've ever heard of.
So I'd encourage everybody out there to do your research.
The worst plan I ever heard of is centralizing the food production versus making it as decentralized as humanly possible so that you're protected with whatever happens. These people never learn. Now, do they want to depopulate as well to deal with the new constraints of their system? I mean, what is the deal and the cycle? Because it's obvious they're trying to depopulate.
Well, it's all about carrying capacity. Again, you know, there's a finite amount of resources at the way we're doing it now. I'm not saying this planet is any way finite at all.
That's right.
We were using magnetic motors and different energy generation systems.
That's right.
And we're encouraged to grow our own gardens like we did with Victory Gardens in World War II. I mean, this would be an entirely different world.
Yep.
Entirely different. So just the constraints we have right now, the way we're doing it right now with the finance system and the debt system and all these things that have locked people in that they just... it's difficult to escape from because the system is set to lock you in. So you're a perpetual battery or a debt instrument yourself, moving the system down to the next generation and the next generation. If that were to stop though, it could be different, but right now there's even laws that they're trying to bring in Oregon again on the next draft after they put this contained feedlot legislation is. The next draft is they're trying to now say to try to do something with gardens is their next step. Or if you have more than a quarter acre in a garden, and if you have nitrogen runoff that they can measure this, then you'll also have to put the same types of like barrier containment systems so it won't interfere with the quote unquote water supply. So their next step is actually going after home gardens in Oregon next year on the next draft of this.
Well,
I think it...
Go ahead.
We're going to be trapped in the cities. I mean, that's the whole thing, you know, the 15-minute cities and this whole thing, to rewild the areas, get the people in the cities under control. But once you're under that much control, then what's your option for consuming anything?
Well, this is the worst plan I've ever heard about centralizing food development and being, because that's about the worst, the most insecure situation you could possibly create. And then they want to cram you in and then no one has control over their own food or anything. You are completely at the mercy of some idiot that doesn't care about you for your basic survival, which we kind of are at the mercy now, but that would be going to the extreme.
Yeah, if you look at it, I mean, how many seed companies and agribusiness companies are really out there that are providing, like Archer Daniels, okay, Syngenta, Monsanto? And we're already kind of at that edge anyway, where it's just 100,000 acre farms, 10,000 acre farms are providing your food. That's all GMO. And I mean, for us to grow healthy foods, they discourage that. They discourage you from trying to grow your own foods. I think it should be the opposite because they absolutely know the cycles here. I think I went off point there, but carrying capacity is we grow this much food, however many tons. And if you start to look at the carryover stocks, this is a good one. If you go to the USDA website and you took at the world totals, when I originally started doing this, they were like 750, 800 million tons of carryover. Well, now they're down around like 350 million tons of carryover. So I've seen that thing drop 500 million tons in carryover since the last 10 years. So just do the math out. At what point do we start to get what we grow is what we get? There's no more carryover stock left. There's nothing in the silos. It's just what we grow is what we get. So that amount of food that's grown on the planet, you get this amount of people who can survive on that. And if that is going to decrease, then the population has to decrease with it. But now be nefarious for a minute. I'm asking everybody to maybe put a different nefarious hat on here in the role play. You know, this food supply is decreasing every year because of changes, solar activity, and the cycles we're going through, magnetic fields changing. How would you reduce the carrying capacity without allowing most of the general populace to know that it's a natural cycle and keep them in their, you know, complacency, narrow band, and then, you know, inject fear every so often to keep them even more in that tight band? Because that's really what's going on. The minute you understand it's a natural cycle, you're no longer controllable. You're no longer controllable.
Well, it seems they want to reduce the population significantly to deal with their centralized food production, which is the dumbest thing I ever heard about centralized food. That's the first time I've heard that they want to centralize it like that. That's a disaster for humanity. But that's what their plan is. They probably want to, because they worship, they're pagan. They're not Christian or any other religion, they're paganists. And so they worship the natural earth. Some of that is really good, but other parts of it are anti-human, you know, what they're sacrificing and things. So they want to get back to just everywhere possible, just having earth be natural, centralize, get people into certain pockets, and then centralize food development. That's what it sounds like. And then greatly depopulate. That's what it sounds like. That's what it sounds like you're saying is the overall plan.
Yeah, the depopulation part of it, I can't say if it'll be purposeful, it'll be natural, but whatever. Nature, we've seen massive amounts of animals, butterflies, different insects, and when the optimal conditions for those overpopulation of a species, when that disappears, whether it be a drought or a forest fire, whatever comes in, that population crashes or reaches its, you know, it equalizes the capacity of what's there for the population to consume on to the number of mouths to feed, whether it be insect, bird, reptile, human, Homo sapien, doesn't matter. You're in that. We're no different. You know, we're an animal too.
Yeah,
we're going to follow the same parameters of nature. Nature dictates it.
Okay. So you also, you're tracking that we're probably going into a mini ice age. When the earth is warmer, it produces more food. So the global warming thing is, you know, I've seen charts showing that of the last 9,900 years, we've been warmer than it is today. This whole global warming is just, it's, we've been hotter most of the rest of the, you know, history. And that when the earth is warmer, we actually do better because there's more food, whatever. So if we're going to a mini ice age, that is the cycle you're talking about where we can't produce as much food. It's really kind of a dire situation. So what I'm asking is, or what I want to get to is the geoengineering. They're obviously pumping our atmosphere with crap all the time. Are they trying to purposely warm it up, or what are they doing? Trying to get ahead of this cycle? I'm just theorizing. Okay, good. Go ahead.
Well, I know somebody who does a little more deep research into that. And I saw you had Jim Lee that you'd interviewed. I've been with Jim a couple times. Yeah, he's really like top notch. If you want to get somebody who truly understands the science, check out Jim's work. But cosmic radiation management is a thing that's not, it's another layer of the onion of the geoengineering. So the particulates that you see in the sky and the persistent contrails that thin out into those reflective clouds that they're trying to put up, A, it does retain the heat, B, it reflects off. But C, what they're really, there's another layer of the onion called cosmic radiation management. Now, when the sun starts behaving, now the cosmic rays aren't really as high as they could be because we're at solar maximum. But if you look at just the charts on every regular 11-year solar maximum, solar minimum, when we come off that and come into the regular 11-year solar minimum, we get galactic cosmic rays increase greatly because the magnetic field of the sun doesn't block that out. It's like our natural shield. So think about that. If it's like that on an 11-year cycle, cosmic rays with Heinrich Spensmark's work are known to increase cloud nucleation or cloud building. So what they do is there's a charge that comes in there, wham, and it hits on a piece of dust in the atmosphere, and then it cascades off, and it creates a little particulate. The magnetic charge is there for something else to bind to it and then create that cloud droplet. So 7 times more cloud cover would be predicted during a grand solar minimum if we get into that really low amount of sunspot activity or low solar activity. The amount of cosmic rays is going to ramp up tremendously. Now, if you look at what's being sprayed up there, metals, barium, strontium, aluminum. Yeah. Now, when you see cosmic rays come in and slam onto a piece of metal, nullifies charge. So then, therefore, it doesn't cascade off and it doesn't create the base particles for those cloud droplets to start formation. So if you're looking at cosmic radiation management, is it to stop runaway biblical floods? I mean, they get a reprieve right now to a point because we're in solar maximum. But if you look at the charts and you go back, just like you're talking about with temperature charts, if you look at solar activity charts and the height of solar activity at solar maximum, we're way, way low in comparison to what has been over the last several thousand years, or even since the 1950s. If you go back and take a look at some of those charts, and the amount of sunspots back then was exponential compared to where we sit today. So we are at lows anyway, at 100-year lows in solar activity. And as we creep down on that over this next solar cycle, 26, 27, you know, then you start to look and they're really going to have to ramp up this spraying program. If it is, you know, I'm saying there's two purposes for this thing, but I'm talking about the cosmic radiation management side. If it is truly, that is the main thing they're using to stop biblical floods and all this massive cloud formation that would turn us into a cloud planet. And that's one of the drivers for the coolness that onsets and gives us those cooler temperatures and feedback loops where more ice is then pushed down. And we get a lot of feedback loops when it's cloudier. If that's truly the reason, then you're going to see an enormous amount of more spraying as it comes up, say about 3 years from now, when we really dip off and we're coming into that solar minimum. You're going to watch these spraying programs go into like a 10X, because if they're going to use it to stop cloud building, they're going to have to ramp it up to something that would almost be unbelievable, to the point of it's already, you know, not hideable anymore. People just don't even want to look up anymore. Oh, I see it, but I don't know what to do. I don't even want to talk about it. It's too big of a problem. How are you going to stop it? You know, it's there. It's true. Detrimental, to say the least. And it's a planet killer at best. You know, I mean, you can't put that stuff up and break the system like they're trying to do. They're trying to interfere with play God. And there's the feedback loops of them playing God is already being visible with the mix ups of a lot of rainfall patterns as we're seeing it right now. It's just not to mention
how those aluminum, those heavy metals affect our bodies and all living creatures on Earth.
Yeah. You know, now they're trying to tell you what you can and can't eat. You can't eat the deer anymore. Oh, there's some kind of weird disease in the deer. You're not allowed to eat the deer anymore. But we can't have meat anymore. They're just taking the entire ecosystem offline for what you can consume. You're going to have to eat lab-grown meats and then fake vegetables mixed with insect protein. That's not nature. That's an abomination is what that is. And that's where they want to take you, into this false reality of inverted reality itself, where everything is created from a lab. There's nothing natural left. And that's the reality they want to feed you.
Well, our bodies can't handle it. Our bodies will shut down, which is what's starting to happen now.
Yeah, and the spirituality too. You look at the spiritual being inside this physical body shutting down, but the spirituality, that spark of divinity within it, is also affected too. Like, you're seeing them both. You can't affect one without affecting the other. Like, this blasé that has swept the world, this darkness, is tomorrow's going to be worse kind of feeling. And I'm looking more for the solutions for things to get through this versus just, oh, it's all going to go down on the ship. We might as well drink and hold on to the Titanic, you know?
That's right. Yeah. Well, let's talk about solutions, because that's what I wanted to get into, because it's like, yeah, it can get pretty dire, but I think that there could be a positive in all this as we figure this out and we say, heck no, and we're going to create a better world. So what are the solutions from your perspective?
Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up, because the only reason I'm telling you everything I did tonight is you need to understand the problem, what's happening and why it's happening. And once you get that kind of clearer in the mind of everything you're seeing around you as a result of this natural cycle ongoing and governments trying to stop the damage and keep the populace uninformed and blame all these other excuses on why things are not the way they used to be. So swing it over here. Things used to be, we grew 40% of all the food that we needed in an entire city or in a state in our own backyards. That would be the first step, is getting us back to community gardens, teaching kids in school how to grow food, beginning at just the basics, getting, if it's too much work for you, get with your neighbors. And, you know, if there's no fences in between your yards, make like a community space in the back of 3 yards or 4 yards together, where the families come out and have a much larger garden. You have more hands working on it. And then Marjorie, she got some great, you know, different classes over there, and just a plethora of information. You can raise your own meat in the backyards. You can do your gardens in the backyards. But that knowledge needs to be right at the front, because everybody's always relying on either, you know, cattle or pig, and they think that's all there is for meat source. But then you realize that, you know, if you wanted to, you could do all the birds and the rabbits, and there's all these other things for protein sources that we could do right at home. And then, mm-hmm. you know, you start to cut out the dependency on the system. And that's what the system doesn't want, is you less dependent on the system. So it's a feedback loop there too. They need to keep you on the system, because the more people that break free and understand, you can produce your own food, your own proteins, your own honey. And once you get enough people doing it, then you can trade labor for that. and there's no tax. Then you're like, well, they're starting to break the system.
And you think gold and silver is probably what we need to do to protect ourselves from a monetary standpoint?
Among other things, but, you know, look back in history, tools. That's a great one to have. Fuel also. Mm-hmm. Repair parts. And when I say tools, I'm talking about gardening tools, but I'm also talking about things like wrenches, screwdrivers, nails, this type of thing that are going to get much, much, much more expensive. Like I had somebody sent me a picture because we used to buy nails and screw in bulk. They had these big bulk containers out there and actually scoop it out and you buy 5 pounds of nails, 2 pounds of nails, whatever you needed for your project. Those are all empty. And they're like, we don't know. We can't order. We don't know when it's coming back. The only thing for sale now is in the box. And those things are really expensive. So think about all these things that were traded in the past that also could hold value as a physical thing. It's not gold and silver. Awesome. They're going to hold and you can trade that and you can get an enormous amount of value out of it. But having the tools to be able to grow the food, having repair parts, having knowing how to repair some things, having the whole socket sets and all the screwdrivers and all those tools where you could repair machinery itself, because you can have machines, you can do much more work. And then having some, you know, what about a rototiller? I mean, these are kind of physical goods that are going to retain value during these times that are also going to save labor. And that in itself is going to be worth something. So think far beyond just the gold and silver, but do a little study in history. I mean, you know, saving feathers, not so much today. Seashells, screwdriver, you know, tools like shovels, yeah. Rakes, hose. Then you have to realize, and then the skill sets too. Another thing that's going to be real, real, real valuable is like boosting up your skill sets in this whole new environment. I mean, how many of you know how to whittle down a handle to, if your rake handle breaks, I mean, can you go make a new handle for it? That's old school. That's grandma, grandpa kind of age stuff. Well, everybody knew how to do that, but very few do today.
Yeah, it's not that complicated if you just learn some of these things. Well, this is really great. I really appreciate it. Would you stick around and do a little segment for my Substack? And before, you know, stick around so we can do another segment. And then also tell everybody where they can find you and they need to follow you.
Yeah, the first place at Mini Ice Age Conversations podcast, and my co-host and myself, Ransom Godwin, we go around there for about 2 hours at a time, talking about a lot of these same issues and then focusing in on, you know, some of the things that we see that directly relate to this, but then also at the same time, what are some of the solutions that people are doing, like vertical gardens in their homes, rotary grow systems. You know, we're always talking about new inventions that are coming out that can help us grow food more easily, different kind of fertilizer supplements. How can you make your own fertilizer at home? Like we run through a gamut of stuff in our shows. So that would be a great one to start. And then the Adapt 2030 channel, which has less and less reach on YouTube. So I moved over to Brighteon, BitChute, and and Rumble. The Adapt 2030 channel over there. You had the same experience on YouTube. So
of course, yeah.
The more you speak the truth and start to reach people, the more they reduce your reach because they don't want you reaching people.
It's terrible. So are you part of Marjorie's seminar group? Because she has a bunch of experts on there. Have you done some of those seminars with her?
Yeah, Marjorie and I talk about once a month. And
yeah, she's great.
Yeah. And we're always trying to get the solutions out there because I have a farm, I have a small farm, and being, you know, before I didn't, but I believe in what I see coming enough to go buy a small farm in East Tennessee and then start to set up out there and do some of the same things, get the chickens, have the ducks, build a barn, put your tools in there, you know, go through the whole gamut of learning it, make the mistakes, improve your skill, and then move and pivot.
That's right.
That's the whole thing. You need to learn on the job training. You're going to be repairing stuff more than you're going to be doing farming. Your stuff always breaks. So it is what it is. But join us on our journey and me on my journey as I get through this. And the Adapt 2030 channel is a good one. Find me up on Patreon and the podcast, Mini Ice Age Conversations.
Thank you, David.